What is the force propelling the transformation of some of the most accomplished experimental poets of the 20th and 21st centuries? Love and sexual love, says Jean Huving, the professor of English at the University of Washington, Bothell. She makes her case about Ezra Pound, H.D., Robert Duncan, and other poets in the new book, The Transmutation of Love and Avant-Garde Poetics, published by the University of Alabama Press. What an accomplishment.
Thank you.
I can't begin to think of the amount of work that went into doing this.
Well, that's very kind of you to see the amount of work. And you mentioned three of the poets, Pound, H.D., and Duncan, but there were also two others, Kathleen Fraser and Nathaniel Mackey, who comprised the bulk of the book. And yes, it took me a very long time to write, in part because each of the poets that were in the book have a very extensive career. And so in writing on the poets as love poets of a different ilk of an experimental writing, what I call projective love and libidinized field poetics, I wanted to find their love writing in the process of their writing itself. So this meant that I needed to do a chronological study of each poet to see where they had begun and then how they had changed their love writing. And each of the poets began as a fairly traditional love poet. They wrote lover-beloved poetry, and then each of them changed into a more experimental mode, which I claim in the book is a different way of writing sexual love. So that was one of the big time consumptions in the book, was simply locating careers and locating this alteration in form as a way of tracking that, in fact, their libidinized field poetics are actually a different way of writing sexual love, which we mainly think of as lover beloved, like I'm in love with you, and there's a whole array of love poetry beginning, you know, Ovid, Catullus, Petrarch, etc., Keats, but in the 20th century, that really intense fervid love writing falls away.
Falls apart despite the efforts of Donald Trump to keep it the way
it is. Right. Exactly.
Can you give us a sense of how many years went into this?
Okay. I started out with a different book, but by about, I would say, 12, 13 years, I was into the book that I wrote. And I initially started out the book as a book of women's love poetry. And I changed from that because I realized I was more interested in some love poets than others, namely H.D. and Kathleen Fraser. And that then took me to other poets with whom I thought a similar kind of poetics was involved.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You alluded to it just a moment ago, but you're responding to a situation of love writing and poetry that has basically been his sexual love or none at all.
Right.
So the 20th century, this begins to fall apart because of, gender issues, because of sexuality issues, and of course in Mackey, race issues come up. And that's the last part. He's the last poet that you cover. So tell us about this stance, his sexual love or none at all, which we see in the presidential campaign basically falling apart,
and in the
letter that the lawyers of the New York Times wrote to Donald Trump saying, no, this is not libel because your own client is bragging about these sexual assaults,
right.
You know? So it's falling apart, but you say in the book the lover-beloved dynamic is problematic.
Yeah, and it's falling. I mean, first of all, there are women who in previous centuries wrote love poetry, but the only really famous one is Sappho. And the reason for that is that indeed I argue that the lover position as it's been developed and thought and considered is empowers men. It's a masculine position. And it's really interesting that you brought up the Trump example, because that's exactly the kind of bottom feeding that the love tradition, as august and beautiful and sublime as it can be, enables. It enables a male lover to essentially occupy the agency of love. And the misguided notion on somebody like Trump's part, that as a sexual agent, that entitles him to whatever beloveds or treats that he can find in the environment itself. But I would not argue that. I wouldn't argue that. That's sexual aggression. But there's a kind of continuum between what gets validated in the culture, the kind of prowess or the agency of a masculine lover, then becomes entitling to many agents, usually men, not always, taking advantage of the sex of it without really engaging what the love, sexual love, entails.
Or as David Bowie might have said, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Right, right. Exactly.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
And it's like women do wham, bam, thank you, sir, or whatever. That's not really something they can get away with in music, unless they really are careful how they position themselves. Like someone like Madonna, I think, has her own versions a little bit of stuff like that, but not nearly as crude as some of the lyrics have become elsewhere. And it's basically a difficult position for a woman, or I would say a minority writer, and I've heard a lot from, say, Asian male students that take my classes in creative writing, that there's some way that they feel cut out of love poetry, cut out of rock music, that somehow they're not seen as iconically lovers. I have a lot of Asian students, so that's why it's come up. And in the Western tradition, it's just a position that men have been able to occupy with a lot of confidence and empowerment, all the way from wonderful male love poets such as Robert Creeley or Keats, all the way over to more iffy, maybe popular music, although there's a lot of terrific popular music. Bob Dylan has some great love songs. But it's not really a position that women, especially heterosexual women, maybe lesbian women a little bit more, have been able to occupy in an empowered cultural way. And I always say, make that distinction, because anyone can say and do anything. It's just whether or not it's going to have any kind of empowerment for you in the larger cultural scene. And Donald Trump's a great example, because you can see that even as such a bottom feeder as he, that with a certain group in America, he's got a huge power. He's got a huge cultural power for essentially being a sexual predator. It simply is, I would say, a continuum from sublime, wondrous love poetry, in which women oftentimes have a bit of a problematic place because they're passive beloveds. But nonetheless, the love poetry is moving, and one wouldn't mind to have, say, Robert Creeley or Keats as a lover. Never Donald Trump, thank you. But basically, it's a position that men can hold, being a very active agent lover. And I just can't think of many women poets that have gotten that kind of drive, except when they become experimental, such as Emily Dickinson. She's already, you could argue, she's doing a little bit of what I say the experimental poets are doing with love.